I call this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Today we have three bills to get through and a lot of interesting testimony. Representative Mueller, have you had a chance to examine the minutes and would you like to make a motion?
I would, Madam Chair, and I would move that we approve the minutes.
Representative Mueller moves to approve the minutes from yesterday, March 3rd. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Okay, Rep. Sensenmura is here, and she is our first bill author today. Welcome back to the Education Policy Committee. And while you're getting settled, I will move House File 3776 before us. And I understand there's an amendment you'd like to offer.
Yes.
So I will move the A2 amendment, and can you please speak to the A2?
Yes. So the A2 amendment clarifies some of the language around IEP and 504 plans and when students can use these devices as their plans dictate.
Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Sensenmura, to your bill.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Bennett, and committee members. Happy to be before you today to talk about HF 3776, which I really see as a conversation starter about a really important topic, which is screen time and how it impacts our youngest learners. At the legislature over the last couple years, I think we've had a really robust and rich conversation about cell phones in schools. We've heard a lot from students, from parents, from educators about the impact of cell phones and device and technology use while at school, particularly the impacts of social media on students' mental health. And I think we have made good progress of asking all schools to have clear policies around that and really looking at the way that cell phones are impacting our children's learning. I think we need to have a similar discussion about screen time, even if it is screen time that is directed by a teacher. Currently, our statutes just say that students in a publicly funded, program for preschool or kindergarten can use a tablet if it is basically teacher directed. It needs to have teacher engagement. And I think that right now that is really broad. This issue became important to me because I have a rising kindergartner, and when I was going around looking at both pre-K classes for him and kindergarten classes, I was just really surprised by the number of schools that were having our youngest learners, pre-K and kindergartners, on devices for a portion of the day. And so I started having conversations, with teachers and educators and students about this, and what I heard again and again was we came out of the pandemic. A lot of schools had had to invest in one-to-one devices. A lot of teachers had moved part of their curriculum online as they had to when we were in remote instruction. And then when students came back into the school building, we just kind of continued to utilize these devices, some of this online curriculum, without necessarily, I think, giving it the due diligence and thoughtfulness that it needs. There's a lot of research that shows us that the benefits to our youngest learners of screen time do not outweigh some of the negative consequences, things like delays in development, lack of ability to pay attention in school. I also think we know that if we are having kids on screen, it competes with other important things they could be doing, like going outside, learning social skills, getting physical activity. And so I've also heard from teachers that say, I would like more direction about screen time. I think another concern that I've heard is that sometimes there is curriculum that is mandated by a school or a school district that mandates that teachers have their children on devices for part of a day. And teachers don't necessarily like that because they want to be able to have direction over whether or not their students are on devices. I think there's also concerns around if I'm a parent and I'm sending my kid to school and I want to tell the school I don't want my kid on devices at all. It doesn't really seem like right now there's that option for parents. So I think that, we could have a robust conversation about screen time at all grade levels. I wanted to start with just our youngest learners because I think the evidence is there that they are the ones that are most negatively impacted by screen time. So I have a couple testifiers with me today. I think you also have a note of support for the bill from a physician and look forward to conversations about this important topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Censor Mura. We will now move to testimony. Our first testifier today is Amanda Fay, the Executive Director of Technology at Minnetonka Schools, followed by Catherine Myers, Executive Director of Live More Screen Less. Please proceed to the testifiers table. I will, whenever you're ready, starting with Director Fay, please restate your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Amanda Fay.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair and Education Policy Committee members. My name is Amanda Fay. I'm the Executive Director of Technology for Minnetonka Public Schools, a member of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and the Secretary of the Consortium for School Networking of the Minnesota Chapter. I have served in a variety of roles in K-12 public education. As a former, I consider myself forever, English teacher, technology instructional coach, director of instructional technology, and now executive director of technology, working closely with teachers in all of these roles. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. I'm here today to share with you how HF 3776, as currently drafted, would impact Minnesota's public schools. While I and many educators I work closely with fully support research-based monitored screen time for our youngest learners, the current law already effectively addresses concerns regarding unsupervised passive use. It is important that you have the opportunity to hear about the difference between passive screen consumption and intentional, standards-based, monitored, guided learning that involves digital media technology. A blanket prohibition on digital media technology in pre-K and kindergarten would create a direct conflict with existing state mandates and would take away the professional judgment of experienced and knowledgeable teachers across the state. The state currently mandates in the English language arts standards that early educators teach specific technology integrated benchmarks. One example of this is the strand of listening, speaking, viewing, and exchanging ideas. To quote the mandate, students will thoughtfully and safely access, analyze, and create written, oral, and digital content applicable to task, purpose, audience, and discipline. This standard explicitly requires, with prompting and support, students will create an individual or shared multimedia work for a specific purpose. Example, to share lived or imagined experiences, to present information, to entertain, or as artistic expression, considering digital footprint, and to create written, oral, and digital content that communicates knowledge and ideas in a variety of presentation styles with prompting and support. This is one example of one standard. There are more. Both of these benchmarks carry an asterisk indicating direct alignment with state computer science standards. My question to you is, how can we legally require kindergartners to create digital content and learn about and understand a digital footprint while simultaneously banning the digital media they need to accomplish that? Further, to comply with existing one-to-one universal screening requirements of the READ Act, school districts in Minnesota rely on recently state-approved one-to-one adaptive digital screeners. Banning digital media also bans these tools and forces school districts back to square one. Paper assessments may be an option, however, it's important to consider that one-to-one paper administration of screening our students takes hours of valuable instruction time away from the classroom, in addition to added costs for curriculum and staff time. The bill before you also creates an accessibility barrier. By only allowing screen use for students with an individualized family service plan, an individualized education plan, or a 504 plan, this legislation would effectively remove core universal access accommodations meant to be accessible to all. Tools such as speech-to-text, closed captioning, and screen magnification are universal supports that are digital and require student screen use. A teacher should not have to wait for a formal process to provide a temporary bridge for a kindergartner who needs this help now. Additionally, the drafted changes to HF 3776 are an erosion of local control. Our teachers are highly experienced and knowledgeable professionals. They know how to run a classroom, and they know what is best for our children. They are the boots on the ground doing the hard work in the classroom day after day. They know how to balance a tactile, hands-on learning environment with an interactive digital media station to differentiate instruction for an entire class of students at once. A blanket ban of technology use for our youngest learners would remove the ability of our state's teachers to make professional decisions about the best tools for their students at any given time. And it would remove local school boards' abilities to meet the needs and wants of the constituents of their school districts. Please consider how important it is to trust our teachers. Please keep these decisions at the local level. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list is Catherine Myers, the Executive Director of Live More, Screen Less. Please restate your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Catherine Myers. Good afternoon, Chair Jordan and members of the committee. It is nice to be with you this afternoon. I am the co-founder and executive director of Live More, Screen Less, a Minnesota-based organization. I founded the organization in 2019 after spending 25 years in the classroom as an English teacher.
Oh boy.
Our mission is to promote digital well-being for and with young people. So it is with our mission in mind that I come before you to support House File 3776 and to encourage you to create further legislation that is comprehensive and holistic approach to support the digital well-being of Minnesota students. Students arrive at school already dependent on screens and tablets. According to a Pew 2025 research study, the following age groups own a tablet: under age 2, 3 in 10. From ages 2 to 4, 6 in 10. From ages 5 to 7, 8 in 10. With 9 in 10 reporting that their child watches YouTube, with half of them saying that they watch YouTube daily. 50% of that age group, 5 to 7, engages in gaming, with 3% saying their child in ages 5 to 7 engages with an AI chatbot. I mention this to you to think about what it is that teachers are already dealing with those young learners arriving at school. Screen-free time is essential to child development. As reported by organizations, identify the signs of communication disorders in the Screen Time Action Network. They are as follows: children first learn to make friends as preschoolers. That involves engagement. Too much screen time can slow a child's speech and language development. That impacts learning for the rest of their life. Studies have found that higher screen use in preschoolers can limit growth and development in these areas of their brains that are responsible for attention, memory, and social skills. Children who use screens to calm down may have difficulty managing their emotions. Trained educators understand child development and what screen time might be replacing. Tabor Samuelson, veteran educator with 30 years experience in public schools and a master's in education and administrative credential, says, "Our youngest learners must be in an environment that is rich in print, full of language, and with their peers. This allows them to develop their attention span, encourages oral language development, comprehension, fosters essential social skills, and builds fine motor skills. These foundations of learning are created in a classroom with a credentialed teacher who knows how to adjust their style and curriculum to meet the needs of their students. Tech often interferes with this important work." One guiding question that we ask about technology is, what is screen time replacing? For our early learners, is screen time replacing rich engagement with print, language exchange with peers, ability to develop attention span and to regulate emotions, oral language development, comprehension, fostering social skills, building fine motor skills? If yes, then you have your answer how to vote on this bill. Elementary information specialist Greta Schramm, with a master's in education and 30 years as a public school educator and founder of Pencilbox Solutions, remarked on the development of tech skills. technology skills can be acquired quickly later in one's education. What young children cannot get back are the early years meant for play, curiosity, conversation, and real-world exploration. Protecting these formative years is essential for healthy development. Limiting technology in pre-K and kindergarten sets children up for success as lifelong learners. Live More Screen Less first engages with young people in conversation about their tech use and by creating spaces for listening. Let me share with you a few comments high school students have shared when asked, "What would you like younger students to know about technology?" Be careful. Be mindful of your time and what you do. Have more fun than being on your device. Be careful with what you consume online. Be aware of the real world. It's really easy to lose track of the real world. Be aware of the relationships you are making online, but be more aware of your relationships in real life. So much online is meaningless. What I know now, I cherish more my family, my cousins, my friends. Why would I show my device more attention than I do my family? Let's commit to supporting the digital well-being of all learners, the youngest and the oldest, and support them in a call to cherish the real world with real relationships and learning in real time. Technology can wait, childhood cannot. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And with no more public testimony, we will now move to member questions. Members, any discussion to Rep. Sensenmurra's bill, starting with Representative Lawrence?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I appreciate bringing this conversation forward, and with a starting point at least. I think it's a huge discussion that really needs some major attention. My wife has been a substitute teaching a little bit and sees the challenges of the media that is in classrooms as of right now. I think the biggest part that I look at this is I'm not sure I'm ready for a mandate on schools, which doesn't surprise you at all, but I'm definitely open to having more discussion about how we limit the amount of screen time that children use in the classroom.
Representative Sensenmurra, any? Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Roach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. I do respect and appreciate the premise of it. I really do. I think it's, as Rep. Lawrence had said, you know, I think we need to have a broader conversation. I appreciate both the testifiers that I agree with both of them. I really think we need to try to maintain the local control aspect of it. And I'm not necessarily ready to go forward with standing behind it, but I do appreciate the premise of it because I think it's a bigger discussion we need to have.
And before I go to Representative Bierman, I do want to let members know this bill is being laid over so we can continue this conversation, which seems to so far be the dominant ask. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. I appreciate the testimony today. Thank you, Rep. Sensenmurra. I've been following the debates on K-8 and high school bell-to-bell bands around the country and just getting a little bit immersed in this subject and definitely see the harms that have been out there that you can track them from not only the United States but other countries on certain years and the effects. But I hadn't really thought too much about pre-K and K kindergarten. So I was just wondering, is this a question like when parents are bringing their kids into facilities they're asking for right now is to make sure that they're not there, the devices, or what have you heard?
Yeah, Representative Sensenmurra.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I have done like 5 kindergarten tours in the last year, and I'm surprised every single kindergarten tour parents are asking about this, and that's interesting because I think even a couple of years ago, I think maybe you would hear parents who are asking, like, I want my kid to be exposed to technology. How are you teaching them about technology? And so it's interesting that at least in the tours I was in the kindergarten classes, it was parents saying, we don't want screen time, right? Like, we want really limited screen time, or we really want to understand exactly how you're using it. I think parents are waking up to this. You know, there was an article in the Star Tribune a couple months ago that was saying this was, you know, an opinion writer, but she was saying, I find it really troubling. I did a bunch of research and I found that if I wanted to send my kid to a school in Minneapolis that didn't have screen time, I would have to send them to a private Waldorf school that costs $20,000 a year. And so she was kind of raising it as an equity issue of saying, you know, I don't, and I think a little bit about, you know, my GOP colleagues who talk a lot about parental rights, right? And I think about, you know, do you as a parent to have just a parental right to say, I don't want my kid, you know, maybe I'm not mandating what the whole school does, but my kid, I don't want them on screens. And I think that would obviously pose a lot of, that'd be really hard for schools to do. I totally understand that that might not be reasonable, but I think it is certainly something that parents are wanting from what I'm hearing.
Representative Bierman.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. I appreciate that, and I kind of assumed it was a little bit disparate as far as what you find. But I agree with you from the short time I've been engaged, I'm running into more parents with young children who want it that way, even up in middle school, you know, they would prefer that not. Or at my coffee hours, I have people wanting our school district to do a bell-to-bell ban. And they tout the advantages of some of their other kids who have been in private schools where there's a bell ban that has been, or a cell phone ban that has been in existence their entire high school. And they just think they get a better education there. So I hope we continue this. Well, I know we'll continue this conversation at all levels of education. I'm a grandfather now with a young toddler, and my daughter is like adamant, no screens for that boy when I'm with him. And he's not two yet, but we have plenty of toys.
Wow, a grandparent that actually does what their adult children tell them to do. That's got to be a first. Next on my list is Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. And thank you so much, Representative Sensenmuir, for bringing this bill. We got a chance to talk about it a little bit this morning. You know, I agree with the sentiment of it, and I do believe in curiosity and play and that important piece. The one thing that I just worry about with that, and just throwing it out there, is, you know, when kids are on an IEP and need to use some technology for assistance, and we ban it from everybody else, everybody knows who's on an IEP then. And I just want us to be really careful when we legislate and when we talk about this, because it's, you know, no matter what your age is, it's hard enough to be the kid that gets pulled out. We talk a lot about that with lunch, universal meals, like everybody in. So I'm just throwing that out there. I think it's something that as we talk about this, how do we protect those kids that really need it? And, you know, a lot of times disabilities are invisible. So you don't know what's going on, and people don't, you know, they have a right not to have students know what they're up against. So that's just food for thought.
Representative Sensenmuir, great. We will move on to Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you, Representative Sensenmuir, for bringing the bill. Thank you to our testifiers. Representative Roach, I agree with both of them. And I operate in a high school setting and have for a long time. And this was the first year that the school I work at decided on a bell-to-bell ban. And it was a startling and incredible difference that ban made for our high school students being banned from cell phones, not all devices. And, you know, students were more engaged. Students were socializing more. There was noise and laughter in the lunchroom again. It was wonderful. I think it's important that we have this ongoing conversation at all levels, like Representative Bierman said, and look forward to continuing the dialogue and moving this issue forward to the forefront. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hill. Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Sensenmuir, for bringing this forward. It's something so different that my kids didn't experience. My kids went to K through 8 at a Christian day school, so they didn't really have any kind of electronics, and then they went to the high school where they all had iPads and stuff. So that's a big change, but these little guys seeing all the screen time, and I even see from my kids when they had phones when they were probably younger than they should have when they got them, but you live and learn, right? But I appreciate you bringing this. I agree with Representative Green. I agree with Representative Roach. there's a lot of stuff to work through on this, but thank you for bringing it forward.
Closing us out is Vice Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. And I actually just have a couple of questions. I know you've been hearing from us about how we feel about the bill, but I have a couple of questions, and if you can answer, or nonpartisan, either way. First of all, can a school currently right now, if they decided to ban cell phones in their district, are they able to do that right now?
Representative Sensenmura.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So from my understanding, yes. Because I've looked at some schools' different technology kind of plans. I have not seen a school that has completely banned it, but I've seen, for example, schools saying, I saw one school from 9 to 11, no class can have a device, kind of trying to move forward with having some device-free time. The barrier that I have heard that would keep, an individual school or teacher from banning it if they wanted to is that sometimes, and I've particularly heard this around some curriculum related to the READ Act, the curriculum has a component that is not, I think this is a testifier spoke a little bit to this about the screeners, there are some things that are just not, right now, we've not figured out how to do them, from what I say, not with a device. And so that is where kind of maybe an individual school or an individual teacher doesn't have the ability to just say no, but maybe they could work out some kind of variance or something. That's my understanding. I don't know if nonpartisan.
Ms. Para?
Chair Jordan, Representative Mueller. schools can adopt policies banning cell phones. However, there might need to be exceptions. For example, there may be a student that has a 504 plan because there's a diabetes monitor on the cell phone. So there might be exceptions where an individual student might still need access to a cell phone.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Jordan. And that was my understanding. I just wanted to make sure, especially when we heard from Representative Hill talk about how Stillwater has chosen to do this. And so, when I hear about technology discussions about schools, I think back to when I was hearing a presentation from Arkansas when they decided they were going to kind of emphasize this idea of making sure we protect our students and making sure that we have really good practices in our schools. And rather than having a top-down mandate, they said, listen, we have a pot of money that will help us, that you tell us how you're going to do it, and we want to incentivize that innovation. You show us how you want to do it, that fits for your district, that fits for your area, and we'll help you do it. And they had over 75% of their districts choose to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I think is for, now I don't know later how well it continued, I will be very upfront, but that in itself shows me that rather than having some sort of blanket mandate, I wonder if we'd be able to kind of, incentivize some of this type of innovation on what that looks like. My last question, Chair Jordan, and thank you so much for your patience, is I get very nervous when I hear about parents feel uncomfortable about asking to be opted out of technology or certain assignments. As a person who taught English for several decades, I remember one of the years that we adopted a curriculum that used all of this technology, and it was counterproductive. It was horrible. I hated it. And so I chose to do other work around it because I didn't like it at all. But I've also had parents come and talk to me and say, hey, I don't want this to happen here. And so just currently, if a child is, and a parent does not want their child to use technology, do they still have that right to say, I don't want that to happen. Can I opt out of my kiddos for this?
Rep. Sensenmura, would you like me to ask nonpartisan staff about that? Great. I will turn it over to Ms. Para to try to help us out here.
Chair Jordan, Representative Mueller, I'm not aware of any case law on that or any, it's not a religious, if you're looking sort of a religious situation or within the framework of sort of established rights, I'm not sure where that would fit in.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. And so I saw it as more of a curriculum type thing that you could opt out of a certain like, I didn't like this assignment type thing. And I've done that for other students as well. So, gosh, as a person who has had to teach in a school where they've banned cell phones and then they just went on their laptops, it's a thing that is really difficult. And it's something that we really need to have a conversation about. The way that it's currently written, I would really like to have more conversation about it, but it's something that I've been really, I myself as a teacher have been something that we've been having a lot of discussion about. So thank you for bringing it forward. I still think that schools can do this already, and so maybe unnecessary as we're talking right now, especially since I think we had legislation just last year or 2 years ago that said that schools had to adopt a technology or cell phone policy. So, I mean, I think we've already started moving in that direction, but really excited to continue that conversation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Sensenmura, any closing remarks?
Thank you for the discussion. I really do believe that our concerns about kids and screens and cell phones and the impact of social media and big tech is a bipartisan issue. And so I look forward to continue work on this. Bottom line, I'm worried about our kids. I think we're all worried about our kids. Our kids are going to, regardless of what happens at school, be more exposed to screens than any other generation before them. And so I think it's really worthwhile to think about what's actually happening in the school building with these devices. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Representative Sensenmura. And with that, I will lay the bill over. Our next bill for consideration is House File 3557. Representative Kraft, welcome to the committee, and please make your way to the testifiers table. And I will move House File 3557 before us. When you are ready, Representative Kraft, please introduce your bill for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's great to be here. I am really just so excited to introduce this bill to you today. House File 3557 would establish a program that is voluntary for school districts and students, and it integrates into schools' existing processes. It encourages practical science education and workforce development in one of our highest growth job sectors, jobs requiring green skills like in clean energy, and has been shown in Colorado to reach a wide range of students and wide range of school districts, and you'll hear about that from one of the testifiers. The Minnesota Seal of Climate Literacy would be a high school diploma endorsement designed to demonstrate a student's proficiency in climate literacy. Students would complete three things to get the seal: one high school science course, a second course that includes climate literacy, and then a local community project tailored to the student's specific interests. So I learned about this over the summer as it started in Colorado a couple of years ago, and I was so impressed with how it's grown there, especially the wide range of interest in it from many different parts of Colorado and many different types of students. So the first thing that I did was I went to bring this idea to an organization of students and get their input. They were super excited, and it eventually led to being connected to the Minnesota Youth Council. And if you all aren't aware, the Minnesota Youth Council is something that was created by state statute in 2013. It's the, according to the website, the official voice of young people statewide. It has 36 representatives from middle schools and high schools that advise the governor and the legislature on issues that affect their generation. And there are four representatives from each congressional district on that youth council. The reason I raise this is this bill was, they hear bills, they can make omnibus bills, but they heard this bill yesterday and unanimously supported it and approved it. So given that, I have some testifiers, and I hope you'll strongly consider this bill.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. On my list, I do in fact have two students from the Minnesota Youth Council, Fevin and Zoha, so if they could please approach the testifiers table.
And while Fevin's approaching, Zoha has food poisoning, so isn't able to make
dear.
It today.
So. Well, welcome to the committee, Fevin. We are sure you will do a good job. And for members who have not presented a bill before the Minnesota Youth Council, it is very difficult. It is very serious. I recommend you know your bill very well before you do that, because you will get grilled on it. And it is an experience you should all have as a legislator. That being said, welcome to the committee, Fevin. Please state your name for the record. As a minor, you do not need to say your last name if you don't want to, and then proceed with your testimony.
I'm Fevin Teshvai, and good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name, as I said, Fevin Teshvai, and I'm a student at Burnsville High School and a youth representative on the Minnesota Youth Council, where I have the deep honor to represent over 1.3 million young people across our state. Through the Youth Council, I've had an incredible opportunity to engage in climate justice education, a topic I deeply care about and a sentiment many young people across our state would agree with. Through my time engaging with this issue, I've learned many important things, from how artificial intelligence affect water sources to how to make electricity from a potato. But possibly the most important thing that I've learned about climate education is it's important how we talk about it. Too often, conversations about our environment are framed through fear, like alarming social media posts or headlines. And for young people like myself, it can feel really overwhelming. But when students are given accurate information, supportive guidance, and opportunities to act, that fear quickly transforms into purpose. This is why the seal of climate literacy is so important. This seal does not tell students what to think, it gives them the tools to think critically. Allow students to explore issues that align with their interests, whether it be conducting a scientific research project or a community one. This allows students to take on ownership and engage with the material about our changing environment in a positive manner. For me, environmental education has helped me grow as a young leader, not by teaching me just the basics about environmental justice, but also how to engage with it proactively. Without a doubt, this same growth will be seen among students across our state as they begin to not only understand the challenges facing our world, but solutions to solve them. At its core, I think we would all agree that education, particularly high school, is a place to engage and create capable leaders of tomorrow. We teach math to develop problem-solving skills. We teach English to strengthen communication. And we one day can very well soon encourage students to teach comprehensive climate literacy skills to strengthen civic awareness and scientific understanding. By passing this bill would be a clear step forward for Minnesota students to gain the knowledge and confidence to not only navigate the world, but also shape it. Thank you.
Thank you, David, and I apologize for mispronouncing your name. Next on my list is Megan Bernard, followed by Mary Sewell. Ms. Bernard, if you could approach the testifier stand, get comfortable, and then state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Megan Bernard. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and distinguished guests. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today regarding the Seal of Climate Literacy. I also wish to thank Senator Kraft and the Minnesota Youth Council.
Representative
Kraft. I wish you were set.
Rewind.
For the opportunity to speak on behalf of this bill.
It's okay, you're forgiven.
I take my jacket off. Okay, I'm here today to share with you my support for the Seal of Climate Literacy. This seal will help prepare Minnesota high school students for the future and introduce them to a wide range of green careers in fields such as renewable energy, environmental conservation, skilled trade, advocacy, and agriculture through real-world, hands-on learning. The seal will provide a framework for districts and schools across our state to garner student engagement, foster climate knowledge, and grow green job skills among our high school students. In my role as the district sustainability manager for the West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Eagan area schools, I support teachers, students, curriculum, government, and nonprofits in creating opportunities to engage our students in meaningful environmental learning experiences. For example, for the past 5 years, we've partnered with Great River Greening, the Minnesota environmental nonprofit, to engage our students in native landscapes and planting prairies on our school properties. As a member of our district's Career and Technical Advisory Committee, I can attest to the challenge and importance of developing opportunities to build career pathways for high school students within our current educational system. Engaging students in career pathways must go beyond the classroom and foster place-based learning, mentorships, and meaningful life experiences. This year, after 4 years and more than 100 hours of curriculum and partnership development, we launched our first high school course in natural resources, sustainability, and food systems through our Career and College Readiness Initiative. Similar to the Seal of Climate Literacy, this course provides our students the opportunity to learn about green careers through field experiences and internships. While our district was able to create this course, I recognize that for several schools and districts across Minnesota, this would be difficult or unattainable due to time, staffing, resources, and budget constraints. The Seal of Climate Literacy is about reducing barriers to curriculum development, increasing both access and equity, providing program resources at the state level to all schools, and engaging students in critical thinking, leadership, as well as college and career readiness skills. The SEAL will empower students to be problem solvers and system thinkers, both of which are invaluable life and career skills. It will foster place-based knowledge of our Minnesota environment. For most of us, green job skills were not something we considered in our high school careers. But today, green job skills are in high demand, with careers in the green job sector outpacing employment. In order to reduce this gap, we must engage our youth in opportunities for them to learn knowledge and skills which gain exposure to these career pathways. In February, Minnesota released the 2026 Climate Action Framework.
Ms. Bernard, could you please wrap up your testimony?
Of course.
Thank you.
This framework addresses the climate challenges Minnesota faces, such as habitat loss, air and water pollution, drought, warmer winters, and hotter summers. This framework instills a vision of carbon neutrality, resiliency, and equity, and recognizes the critical role of climate leadership for this vision to become a reality. I cannot think of a better answer to our framework's call to action than the Seal of Climate Literacy, for it will empower our youth to see themselves as part of this leadership and provide them with a greater understanding of their potential and ability to be agents of change. The challenges are upon us, and the time is now. Let us empower today's students and give them the tools and knowledge so that they can help change tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Next on my list of testifiers is Mary Sewell. Please make your way to the testifiers table and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for having me. My name is Mary Sewell. Thank you to Representative Kraft for inviting me and for the committee for allowing me to speak about the experience with the Seal of Climate Literacy in Colorado. I'm a former school board member in Denver, and the nonprofit I helped found has been working on the Seal of Climate Literacy in Colorado for the last several years. In addition to helping the policy get enacted in Colorado, my organization has also been working with school districts, especially rural districts, in order to be able to confer and giving them technical assistance and support. So I know I'm not trying to compare everything in Minnesota to Colorado at all, but there are some interesting similarities, including a strong value and ethic around local control. So when this legislation was going forward, it was very important that it be rooted in community norms and not a mandate that was coming to tell communities how they might approach and thinking about climate literacy and education. In the last year, we have been asked in students by students and educators to see if we can help this move forward in other states, and I'm simply here to share our experience and all of our resources and learnings for free because we're so committed to seeing this work. I just want to tell you quickly about some of the students and the projects they did in the first year of implementation in Colorado. We had a fourth-generation ranching student in rural Colorado work through his school's Future Farmers of America chapter to find new ground cover and feed for his family's cattle ranch. He learned about it and then planted it. We had a Native American student who had actually had to move away from her tribe to Metro Denver. Her project was on indigenous agricultural practices and how she could keep them alive even though she lived in the city. We had a Denver student, this might be controversial, but a Denver student who built picnic tables with solar panels to actually be able to recharge devices for students during lunch. And we also had a teacher who worked with her English language learners, all of whom wanted to learn about water sampling, and they got career skills and then translated all of their findings to Spanish, and they were able to share that with their families, which was important to them. Like in Colorado, there are many existing Minnesota organizations, and one of the things that I think, and this is actually rooted in that equity proposition that's so important, is there's no need for new organizations, new programs. All of that already exists here, and I've had like an incredible joy in learning so much about all the amazing nonprofits and clubs that are in Minnesota. Everything you need is already here to do this. And so I think there's also been questions around equity, and I think the bill is designed in such a way to really support equity, both of access and of application. The policy is designed to minimize barriers so that rural, urban, and under-resourced students all have the same opportunity to lead. The percentage of students in Colorado in each school district and charter who attained the seal and qualified for free and reduced lunch was 42% of students compared to 45% FRL for the state, so very close. Because there was no funding room, at least in Colorado, for a significant fiscal note, my organization actually created a grants program with a local foundation to help schools and districts to implement the seal. Grants were very small. Often they went to stipend teachers who were bringing these programs into the districts, and we were able to help implement it through those through that way. And we purposely prioritized funding to the most underserved districts, whether that was rural, ones serving English language learners, free and reduced lunch, and students of color. Those were the ones that had those priority resources. The legislation also encourages schools to let students do experiential learning through existing partners and nonprofits, whether it's a zoo, a club, and those things. Again, doesn't have to be something new. It can be something that's already there. So the last things I'll say is just this is, and Representative Kraft already said this is a zero mandate policy. It actually in Colorado has had incredible bipartisan appeal because youth, both liberal and conservative youth, have been so focused on attaining this. It is very much around the economic needs of our state and creating new job opportunities. And finally, in Colorado, we had a very low fiscal note associated with this bill. It was less than 19,000. I know that the fiscal note I've heard is larger on this bill. I'm happy to do what I can to connect people from Minnesota Department of Education with Colorado Department of Education. This is not meant to be something that the State Department of Education needs to be strongly managing. Their role is really just to be doing that data collection, and I know that the Minnesota bill is written in that way as well. So I very much appreciate you letting me be here. I'm happy, of course, to share any information. But it's just very exciting for youth, and being with Faven and the other members of the Minnesota Youth Council yesterday was an incredible highlight. Thank you
for your testimony, Ms. Sewell. I will remind the committee that we are a policy committee and not a fiscal committee. So the bill is being laid over today, but fiscal notes and that nature are generally discussed in our finance committee. The first member on my list is Representative Keeler.
Got on early. Thanks, Chair. So I have a question. It's not about climate literacy, because I'm with you. I think it's important that we talk about it as a water protector. It's something that I agree with. We've had other conversations about seals in the past, and I have a pretty big issue with them, because when they're opt-in and only some schools can participate in it, what it does is it actually creates an inequity for individuals when they go for like scholarships in higher ed. So if your school wasn't a school that opted in to do SEALs, you then kind of miss out on this next opportunity of scholarships, of advanced enrollments, different things in higher ed. And I think it was the Civic SEAL that we talked about a couple years ago. And so it's not, I just want to make sure on the record, I'm not opposing the conversations and the need that our next generations need to have. I think it's more about the SEAL process in itself can be a disadvantage for students who are going to a school that doesn't choose to do this. I know the opt-in, we're not making it a mandate. I get that. I just want us to be careful when we look at SEALs as a solution, that it is creating an inequitable advantage for some people, maybe unintended. But I just want us to be mindful of how we provide these opportunities for all students, not just the students whose schools who opted in to do things like this. Thank you.
Representative Kraft, response.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kaler, I really appreciate your thoughtful comments. And you know, as a voluntary program, you know, I can't wave a wand and address everything that you raise. You raise some fair points. I will say that what I appreciate about what they did in Chicago was in creating some grant support around that, so to make it easier for districts that maybe don't have resources or aren't concerned to get started to be part of it. But you know, if a district chooses not to be a part of it and a student wants to, your point is a fair point. I think what Colorado has seen is that students start wanting it and push their districts, and most of them kind of comply because it's not that heavy a lift to do it, and there's often a teacher there that's interested in doing it. But maybe Ms. Sewell can comment on that as well.
Ms. Sewell.
No, I don't know that I can answer it much better. And on that equity piece, a lot of times I've had to think to myself of, like, starting something, you have to show demand, you have to show interest, and it has to start somewhere. So I think part of it would be, you know, if this is passed after a few years, you know, looking at it, looking at those equity questions, looking at access, and seeing if there are ways to improve upon it. But we are seeing incredible student interest and educator interest in actually being able to connect with students in a deeper, more profound way. And again, just on our experience in Colorado, it is making an incredible difference in students' lives already.
Next on my list is Representative Gottfried.
Struggled with the thing there. Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. And thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this forward. Yeah, I just want to also expand a little bit upon, you know, what Representative Kaler was talking about and kind of focus on, like, an individual school level as well. I'll share a bit of an anecdote from my own personal experience. You know, I did a lot of extracurriculars when I was in high school. And I had a friend of mine who had, you know, very, very similar drives and passions as me. But instead of being able to go outside of school hours to do all these extracurriculars, really had to work a job outside of school. And therefore was kind of siloed from different opportunities just because of the economic situation that him and his family was in. And that created a pretty immediate disparity in this sort of immediate attainments in college thereafter, to kind of reference what Representative Kaler was talking about. And as I'm looking through the things, the student requirements as to the final experiential project, you know, I see a lot of things that would require time, effort, energy, outside of the confines of the school day. And I don't see any specific reference to anything that you know, explicitly delineates that some of these projects could be completed during school hours as part of regular coursework. I think that the two courses are fine of themselves, but I do wonder, even at an individual school level that has opted into this program, if there may be inequities created by the experiential learning aspect of this. And I'm curious if there has been any thought put into that aspect of it, or if there's a way that we can maybe delineate or specify that, you know, these options could be accomplished through coursework or special projects done within school hours.
Representative Kraft.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Gottfried. I'd be happy to have some language in here that made it clear that it can be done during school hours. I don't know if Ms. Sewell has examples if that's happened or
just that. Ms. Sewell. I'm sorry. Thank you. Just that overwhelmingly the projects were done during school time, even if it was with partners. So we're actually hoping to see if there could be more development of out of school time. But schools that are participating so far want to manage that themselves. So I would say over 90% have been during in-school time.
Great. Representative Roach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this. And then, you know, I wanted to touch base on what Rep. Kaler had brought up about the seal. You know, every school teaches math and reading, and to my knowledge, we don't have a math mastery seal or a reading mastery seal. I think if we're going to, you know, have conversations about seals, we should probably start the conversations there, where every school has that is teaching those. So just a thought.
Representative Kraft, any response?
Madam Chair, I don't have a lot of experience with SEALs. I think this, I'm trying to bring this speaks, yeah, I think this is a good thing to do.
Great. And this bill, just so members know, is also being laid over so we can continue to have conversations. And I know about SEALs or whatever else. And so next on my list is Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this bill. I have a daughter who is a climate reality leader and was trained down in Colorado. So I think this the content here is excellent. To kind of piggyback on my colleagues here, I was curious if there is a student, is there a path for a student to go for this SEAL if their school is not participating?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Green. Right now it's not envisioned that way. We could certainly investigate that. That may create additional requirements on the Department of Education, absolutely, that's a path that we could go down.
Representative Mueller.
All right, thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you, Representative Kraft. I know you and I have talked, and I know I am the author of the other Civic Seal bill, so I can talk about this and say that I'm trying not to be hypocritical with this, but I do understand the concerns, because Representative Keeler brought the same concerns in front of my bill as well. we have now heard after, the language seal, which actually serves a purpose of, hey, I can speak, write, and read in another language, which then brings you other job opportunities for other things. We've now heard, at least I have heard, three different different SEAL bills, one of which I'm carrying, one you are carrying, and another one's called a statistics SEAL bill that was introduced. And correct. What makes the statistics SEAL bill unique is the fact that this statistics SEAL would have actually, what they're proposing, would actually count for college credit in if they ended up getting this, which I thought was an interesting idea. But I think as you're hearing from the committee, there really is a hesitancy, and I've heard it even when I've introduced my own bill, there is a hesitancy to start making our high school diplomas look like Boy Scout badges and Girl Scout badges, where we suddenly have a sash with all these different type of seals on there, which is fantastic because I love both the Boys and Girl Scouts. However, that's not the purpose of our high school diploma. And so let's have a good conversation about this. I know that having interest in things is really important. I did have one question, though, because I had never heard this before in my life. Climate literacy-related courses. Are there climate literacy courses in high school currently?
Representative Kraft?
Madam Chair and Representative Mueller. So there are many courses that have climate literacy concepts within them.
Okay.
So, yes. All right, and it's... yeah, there are many courses that do touch on it. So yeah,
we're all carrying READ Act bills in one way or another.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong, Representative Jordan.
I would ask Faven would like to make a comment on
please,
that.
Please, yes,
sure.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Faven.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of environmental science courses that include climate change or climate crisis as part of that conversation. So I think that was the main reference.
Can I ask this?
Okay. Sure, we're trying to wrap up here, but okay. Go ahead, Ms. Sewell, and then we will go to Representative Kraft for closing comments.
Yeah, so I'm not here to advocate for all SEALs or high school diploma endorsements. I will say there is something really important about listening to students and letting them be the drivers of their own educational attainment at times. And what this does is it incorporates high school graduation requirements that are already there with student interest. And so creating and offering and opening these doors, I think we need to do more of as adults. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kraft, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, thanks for the great discussion. I would just ask you to really seriously consider the vote that happened yesterday in the Minnesota Youth Council, which is 36 students, 4 per congressional district, unanimously voted to approve this. It is not perfect, depending on from which side of the aisle you're on, we could do more, we could do less. But the students here are clearly saying this is something we want, and I hope you will really take that into account and eventually approve this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. And with that, I will lay over House File 3557. Our next item on the agenda is a presentation from the Minnesota Department of Education, specifically their Compass team on attendance, which I know is a very popular topic in this committee. So we have Ms. Angela Mansfield. Please make your way to the testifiers table. And if you need assistance, our excellent pages are here to help you with any technology or anything like that. Just flag them down, get comfy, and when you're ready, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Where's the cord?
Sorry.
Thank you. Find where my port's at. There we go. Okay. Let's make sure that's up.
Welcome. Right. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Sounds great. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Angela Mansfield. I'm Assistant Commissioner of our Office of Educational Opportunity at MDE, and I'm really happy to be here and share a little bit about the Compass attendance team today. I'm going to provide a comprehensive overview of our attendance team, our statewide effort to strengthen student attendance through aligned guidance, professional learning, and responsive technical support. In your materials and on the screen, you'll see just the beginning. Compass attendance exists to help every district, charter school, and tribally controlled school in Minnesota improve student engagement and reduce chronic absenteeism. Excuse me, I haven't talked for a little bit, so my tongue is going crazy. We're taking a systems approach, bringing tools, training, and expert consultation to the field so that local leaders have what they need to make attendance work both sustainable and equity-driven. We've built a statewide attendance support team using temporary funds to ensure capacity reaches the entire state. This team includes an MDE attendance specialist and four temporary statewide attendance leads employed through the Minnesota Service Cooperatives, and they are available to provide guidance, technical assistance upon request. On this slide, you can see the Compass leaders behind this work and the regions of the state they're servicing. Together, the statewide networks ensures we can respond quickly and consistently to the local needs. And I just want to pause for a minute to give a little bit of clarity to the team. They represent each of those service cooperatives that are connected to their name, but they also work collaboratively together. So if there are more needs in one area of the state, they will work together to make sure those needs are met. So while they have specific service cooperatives attached to their name, that doesn't mean they are just stuck in those service areas. The statewide attendance team is also equipped to provide districts and schools with real-time consultation and guidance in alignment with Minnesota's compulsory instruction statute, ensuring that attendance-related decisions support statutory requirements for student instruction. The support has been especially timely given this current context and the challenges districts and schools are navigating related to attendance, compliance, student re-engagement, and families making decisions about safety across the state. Central to our approach is the Compass Minnesota MTSS Attendance Guidebook, released October 31st, 2025. The guidebook distills evidence-based practices that support student attendance, outlines key actions for district leaders, school leaders, and teachers, and curates resources that can help implement those steps. It is designed to embed attendance within continuous improvement cycles, keeping culture and climate at the forefront. Here in slide 5, we're emphasizing how Compass is strengthening our attendance work by first aligning internally across all of our teams. We've engaged the full Compass staff in professional development so everyone is approaching attendance with the same continuous improvement mindset. This is important because all content work is attendance work. whether we're talking about literacy, math, climate and culture, or American Indian student support. Every part of our system shapes the conditions that help students show up and stay engaged. You can also see on the right side of the slide that this includes intentional cross-team collaboration with both the American Indian Student Support Team and the Climate and Culture Team. That alignment is what allows us to create coherent, high-quality professional development and supports externally, ensuring districts receive consistent messaging and tools no matter which part of the Compass team they interact with. Alongside the development of the guidebook and the internal alignment that you saw on the previous slide, we've also launched three professional learning pathways for the 25-26 school year. These pathways are offered free of cost to districts, charter schools, and tribally controlled schools, and they're fully aligned to the Minnesota MTSS framework. Each one includes both fall and spring enrollment opportunities, and they pair structured professional learning with hands-on technical assistance for participating leadership teams. The goal here is simple: to ensure that the professional development we provide translates into practical district-level change that strengthens attendance systems across the state. The first pathway, improving attendance utilizing the Minnesota MTSS framework, helps leadership teams strengthen the underlying infrastructure that supports attendance within their own Minnesota MTS system. It builds their capacity to integrate attendance into continuous improvement cycles and to design proactive, culturally responsive approaches to family and community engagement. The pathway also centers belonging, engagement, and purpose for students because those conditions keep kids coming to school. Participants learn to use data more strategically to identify trends, monitor implementation, and guide decision-making, ultimately building toward an actionable, equity-driven attendance plan. In our most recent cohort, we welcomed 55 participants representing 16 districts. The second pathway, building a strong attendance team, focuses on strengthening the infrastructure of collaborative linked teams so that attendance concerns are identified and addressed within Minnesota's MTSS structures. Teams develop clear protocols for using data, reviewing trends, and monitoring the impact of interventions. They also practice root cause analysis to surface both systemic and individual barriers that might be contributing to student absences. A key emphasis here is culturally responsive communication that brings families in as genuine partners. Participation in this pathway has grown significantly from 21 attendees representing 4 districts in the fall to 53 attendees representing 20 districts in spring. And the third pathway, data-driven attendance strategies, supports districts in strengthening how they assess, organize, and use attendance data. Teams work through structured protocols to identify group level and individual attendance patterns, and they learn how to pair effective strategies with what the data reveal. A major component involves integrating attendance information with academic and behavioral outcomes, both quantitative and qualitative, so districts get a more complete picture of what students need. Attendance in this pathway has included 30 participants representing 14 districts in the fall and 14 participants representing 9 districts in the spring. Across all of these pathways, 44 districts have engaged in professional learning, with 6 pilot districts participating more deeply as part of our statewide attendance goals. Burnsville participated in all 3 pathways. Minneapolis, and these are the pilot districts specifically. I'm sorry, on the next slide. Thank you, Megan. Minneapolis engaged in 2, and districts such as Northfield, Rochester, Sauk Rapids, Rice, and Windham participated in the areas that they felt best aligned with their local priorities. And so I bring this attention to you because you all represent different areas across the state, and you can see we have a touch across the entire state. And I also want to say we just hired our attendance team as of end of last year into the beginning of, I should say, 2025. And I'm thinking in school years because once a teacher, you're always a teacher. So excuse me. But This is really impressive for them to have just been starting out in October, fall of this year, to have this many people, districts that are interested and engaged in this work. And I will give a note, happy to come back and share more broadly about Compass work, but that is also on the heels of the Compass work that's happening statewide, literacy, math, climate and culture, data literacy, really great work. And just last summer, we increased our Summer Institute to 1,500 educators that are coming from all reaches of the state to come focus on summer engagement work after their school year is finished. So just want you to know why people are coming when this is just a brand new part of the Compass work that's happening. In addition to structured learning, we also offer flexible, no-cost consultation to districts. So since launching this report, we've received 16 consultation requests, many of which have led to targeted technical assistance and eventual enrollment into one of those pathways. The attendance team has also provided support around emerging issues raised by pilot districts, which include things like developing strategies to keep students connected during times of community hardship, exploring flexible learning options, clarifying procedures for community or communicating concerns to the agency. This is practical, responsive support that meets districts exactly where they are. We are also advancing the state attendance pilot program. Through this work, we are co-developing common attendance definitions and coding standards to create statewide clarity. Based on feedback from the pilot districts, we offered a pathway series focused on coding and reporting, as well as co-created a model attendance policy. This model policy was shared with the pilot group in February for discussion, and we continue to meet regularly with pilot districts to refine guidance on definitions and coding. This work is essential for creating consistency and building district confidence in how they implement attendance practices. A key component of improving attendance statewide is strengthening interagency collaboration. We're partnering with DCYF to co-develop a district, county, tribal communication model that supports the required communication among those three partners. Beginning soon, we are going to start holding listening sessions with key leaders to understand local needs and shape procedures that are both practical and responsive to community contexts. This partnership work will help ensure that students and families experience a coordinated, aligned system of support. Our work is also strengthened by key collaborations and partnerships. With the Minneapolis Foundation, we participate in convenings focused on mobilized shared efforts around attendance. With the Minnesota Youth Council, we're connecting with student leaders who have chosen attendance and engagement as their priority. And internally, we continue to work across Compass teams, such as the ones I mentioned previously, to evaluate or to elevate evidence-based practices that support schools identified for continuous improvement in attendance. These partnerships help ensure our work remains aligned, community-informed, and grounded in what students and educators tell us they need. To make support more accessible, we've launched the attendance inbox at the location that I identified on the slide, and maintain a Compass attendance webpage with resources, guidance, and updates. These channels allow districts to request assistance, share questions, and access materials as they strengthen their local attendance systems. They provide a quick, reliable way for leaders to connect with expertise as they need it. So in closing, the Compass attendance effort reflects a coordinated statewide commitment, evidence-based guidance, free professional learning, responsive technical assistance, and stronger interagency partnerships, all aligned to support students in belonging, engaging, and thriving in school. We really appreciate the committee's support of this work and for the continuous improvement that's taking place every day in our schools and our districts. So thank you very much for this time. Happy to answer questions.
Well, thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Any questions? And we do have a bill related to this coming right up, but any questions about this presentation or for Assistant Commissioner Mansfield?
Okay, well, don't go too far. Thank you for the presentation again. Our last bill up for consideration today is House File 3585. And I understand, as Chair Bennett would say, we have our dynamic duo of Rep. Keeler and Rep. Bakeberg. So please make your way to the testifiers table. And Rep. Keeler, since you're the member of Education Policy, would you like to make a motion regarding House File 3585?
I would like to make a motion. I do have one amendment.
Okay. And so the motion is to move House File 3585 before the committee to re-refer the bill to Education Finance. And would you like to explain your amendment and move your amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. What the amendment does is when the language was originally drafted, it was drafted that it would be housed under the Department of Children, Youth, and Family. That's not accurate. It needs to be housed under the Department of Education. So that's what the A1 amendment does.
Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Keeler, to your bill as amended.
Thanks, Chair Jordan and members. And also, I just want to thank Representative Bakeberg. The work that we have been doing around attendance has been a commitment to be bipartisan from the very beginning. We both believe that doing what is right for our students and our schools is the best way to get this work done. We have been spending close to 4 years working on things as early as the task force. Representative Lawrence was a part of that with us. And if you guys remember, we had 8 buckets of recommendations that came from that, just to remind you all quickly. Some of it was what the Compass team was just talking about, utilizing our pilot groups to get better at our definitions. If you've been in a school or have done anything around attendance, definitions on absence is very different. The second part was coordination with state and local agencies. And I just want to put a pin in that. We'll come back to that's where really this bill came from. The third one was community engagement, making sure that there's opportunity for our students to earn credits while engaging in their community and different activities. There were some specific MDE requests, which they're working on. They did a good job at giving us updates on. There was some concerns about data sharing, particularly the schools sharing specific data with our counties, and some of the areas of concern there. We've also really tried to address the idea of hiring staff to address truancy, whether that's coming from a county or a school or a community lane. That's something that was important. Transportation, and then last, just community support. And so with that, I'll pause and see if Representative Bakeberg wants to add anything before we walk over the bill.
Representative Bakeberg, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. Before I jump into this, literally before I walked up here, I got a text from my nephew that he had his second child. So,
congratulations.
I honestly had to text my wife and say, is that a boy or a girl name? So so she clarified, little girl, Nina is her name. Nice. So congratulations to my nephew. So, I would echo what Representative Keeler said. This has been bipartisan from the beginning and really pushing each other's thinking on different topics and really trying to learn from each other about the different lens that we look through things at. I also failed today and forgot to wear my purple sweatshirt. She texted me and was like, where's your purple jacket today? You didn't do that. So, but there's a couple other people. So Representative Keeler and I have been working hard on this. Matt Shaver is in here. He's been a fantastic asset to us. And also Scott County is here as well. And Suzanne Arntzen has done a fantastic job and has testified and was part of the study group as well. So, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk, and I'll kick it back to Representative Keeler to go over the bill.
Representative Keeler.
Thanks, Chair. So the bill really creates what is an interagency council on student attendance. We've seen this work in other areas. We have an interagency council addressing homelessness. I think one of the main takeaways we had in the task force is it is not just one agency's job to lean into how we support our students to increase their attendance and likelihood of graduation. We see it overlaps with Minnesota Department of Education, Children, Youth, and Family, Transportation, Department of Corrections, Health, the list goes on and on. And then there's other state agencies that we also learned need to be partners or stakeholders with us as we make some of these decisions. This is major. We've spent a lot of time working on literacy, and we have said over and over, it doesn't matter how great we are at reading. If we're not in the classroom, we're never able to learn the things and the tools that we're giving our teachers to learn. And so the bill is pretty simple. It outlines the different departments and the different state and local agencies that we believe should be at the table to make this decision. There's no sunset. It's an ongoing agency putting a little bit more of the effort. I think it's clear to be said, Bakeberg and I will not be in the House next year. And so you can't just rely on two legislators to be the champions for work that moves forward. There needs to be a structure for us to really make sure that attendance stays in the forefront of our minds here in Minnesota. So with that, Chair, we can move to our testifiers. Thank you.
Great. Thank you to both Representative Keeler and Representative Bakeberg. First on my list of testifiers is Matt Shaver, followed by Assistant Commissioner Mansfield. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Shaver, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
I also forgot my purple. Sorry. Chair Jordan, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the Senior Policy Director at Allies. We're education advocates for kids. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in strong support of House File 3585, to Rep. Keeler for years of leadership and vision and seeing the urgency and value of addressing chronic absenteeism, as well as Rep. Bakeberg's outstanding partnership on this. Ed Allies has three arguments to make on chronic absenteeism today: that this is a statewide issue that significantly impacts each member of this committee's community. Solving for chronic absences is complex work because it's an issue measured in schools with root causes and solutions not always, but often outside the reach of schools. And an interagency council is a wise and innovative approach to holistically addressing this issue. The most recent year we have statewide data on chronic absenteeism is not for this school year or last school year. It's for 2023-2024. In that year, one in four Minnesota students were chronically absent, essentially the same rate as the previous school year. There were 191,321 chronically absent students statewide who missed at least 3 million combined days of school. At 165 days, Minnesota already has one of the shortest school years by days of any state in the country. And we have too many kids missing too many of those precious opportunities to learn to read, do math, make friends, find their purpose and passions. Anything you want school to be for students can't be if they're not consistently showing up. And if you look at our statewide data and your local data too, many kids who benefit the most from what school has to offer are missing the most amount of time right now. And it hasn't always been that way. Tinkering around the edges or inaction means this post-pandemic data becomes the new normal. We find that unacceptable. Next, I'd encourage you to look at a recent study done by MDE and DCYF on kindergarten absenteeism, included with the committee materials. They talked to professionals who work directly with families of kindergartners across the state to better understand barriers to attendance and identified five major themes: health issues, socioeconomic challenges, family obligations and crises, ambivalence about kindergarten, and transportation barriers. And I'd ask us to consider which of these barriers elementary schools are legitimately best positioned to address and move the needle with families on. We'd argue schools can probably make the most impact, not to be expected to be most responsible for addressing ambivalence around kindergarten and transportation to an extent. The rest of the barriers cited in the study are affecting a metric we hold our schools accountable for, and yet the levers of change impacting those systems are mostly outside of the control and wheelhouse of teachers and principals. These systems do exist. Efforts and initiatives to improve access to housing and healthcare and transit are happening in Minnesota, but the connective tissue between them is weak and lacking a unifying purpose. That's where the Interagency Council on Attendance comes in, to orient and coordinate those efforts as anti-absenteeism work. Too much good work is happening in silos, which is causing kids and families to fall between the cracks. The promise of an interagency council is those systems can work together to address root causes, prevent attendance issues, and provide a more cohesive response as they arise. Transportation policy is attendance policy. Housing policy is attendance policy. Economic policy is attendance policy. We need an interagency council on attendance to get key representatives from these fields alongside students outlined in HF 3585 to coordinate and problem solve on an ongoing basis. Thank you for the opportunity to show our support for the bill. Thank you, Rep. Keeler, for carrying it. Thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list is Assistant Commissioner Mansfield, followed by Ashley Hightower.
Welcome back, Assistant Commissioner. Please reintroduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Hello, I am back. Angela Mansfield. Happy to be welcomed back. Thank you for allowing me this next opportunity to address the committee and comment on the bill before us, HF 3585. I would like to first thank Representatives Keeler and Bakeberg for their continued passionate engagement with the department on ways to strengthen our statewide response to attendance. Their advocacy and the work they have undertaken over the last few years really sets a solid foundation for the kind of collaboration this Interagency Council on Student Attendance can build on to be successful from the start. Thank you. The conversations convened by the Legislative Task Force in 2024 made it clear that a response to chronic absenteeism and truancy is complex, and that helping students get back to school and stay connected to learning will require coordinated work from all of the adults involved. Several gaps in coordination were identified through both the task force and the pilot program districts, and MDE remains committed to reducing redundancies, improving interagency communication, and sharing effective strategies through guidance, resources, and training. We also recognize we cannot do this work alone, and this council is a practical recommendation to keep the adults involved, aligned, and moving consistently in the same direction. I appreciate the author's amendment to shift the housing of this council from DCYF to MDE. The work outlined in this bill aligns with the expertise of our Compass staff, and we appreciate the willingness to situate this effort within education while maintaining strong requirements for interagency collaboration. It is my hope that our presentation today, along with the responsibilities outlined for MDE under this bill, will highlight the need for permanent funding for our MDE Compass team. Nearly all of our Compass staff, the same staff doing the great work we described in our presentation, are currently funded with temporary dollars, and their salary expirations are approaching. To faithfully execute the requirements of this council, we would kindly ask the legislature to consider the importance of retaining those FTEs through appropriation in a future Education Finance Committee hearing. However, since this policy committee is the policy committee, heard loud and clear, I won't belabor that point here. And we look forward to continuing the conversation about Compass staff support for the council in the Education Finance Committee. I want to close by affirming MDE's commitment to making sure our students attend school consistently, that they are excited to learn in safe and welcoming schools with caring and qualified educators, and that school communities have the resources they need to keep students engaged and coming back. Thank you for hearing our testimony today. I remain available if there are questions later.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list is Ashley Hightower, followed by Kenneth Ebon. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Hightower. Please restate your name and title for the committee, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Jordan and committee members. My name is Ashley Hightower. I'm with Hennepin County's Be at School program. We are Minnesota's largest educational neglect and truancy program. We average around 10,000 referrals per year. Right now, we are at 6,158. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today and advocate for our students through a truancy and attendance lens. Attendance must be treated as a leading risk indicator for our students and addressed. Chronic absenteeism is not just a school issue. It's a public health, child welfare, transportation, housing, and economic issue. If we do not address chronic absenteeism, Minnesota risks widening academic achievement gaps, increasing dropout rates, and early entry into juvenile systems. Creating an interagency council on student attendance is the next step our state needs to take to ensure student attendance is being addressed. Schools cannot solve these challenges alone. We need a cross-agency approach. Attendance is a reflection of whether our broader systems are working together to support families, and right now I think we can do better. This council will create consistency. We need to continue movement stemmed from the Student Attendance and Truancy Legislative Group. In the last year, our state has learned that attendance practices may look different depending on what school, city, or even county you live in. Inconsistencies in practice create discrepancies and disparities in how our data is read, collected, and viewed, and even funded. When students disengage from school, our systems need to respond quickly, collaboratively, and consistently. This council will create intentionality. We have invested and recognized that students need support in areas such as literacy, we have the READ Act, hunger, we have free school meals, but if those students are not in school, who are we serving? We need to continue looking at our current policies and practice to learn of the unintentional harm some of them may be causing. For example, our current statewide data systems are losing students when they've been 15-day dropped from enrollment. If a student doesn't re-enroll in another Minnesota school, we have lost them completely off our radars, some for years. This is a state-level issue that, without an interagency attendance council, may continue to be overlooked and cost us thousands. We need to intentionally invest in early attendance interventions to engage and keep students in school. Finally, this council will create awareness. We need regular updates and resources, sharing between state, county, and schools and community. We need a public awareness campaign to reaffirm that schools play a critical role as a safe, supportive environment for all students. Families should be aware of trusted community-based social services and mental health resources that can help reduce barriers to attendance and engagement. We will not see improved attendance if we do not make this a priority. To conclude, school attendance is foundational for our students to feel a sense of belonging and engagement in our community. By establishing an interagency council on student attendance, we are choosing prevention over reaction and sending a clear message to our community that attendance is not just a school metric. It's a shared responsibility. Thank you, Representative Keeler and Representative Bakeberg, for leading this work. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Jordan, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Kenneth Abon, and I'm here on behalf of the Minneapolis Foundation to express support for House File 3585, the Interagency Council on Student Attendance. The Minneapolis Foundation is a community foundation whose mission is to drive collective action to realize strong, vibrant communities. We cultivate generosity by taking action on the greatest civic, social, and economic needs, partnering with nonprofits, facilitating grant making, and driving research and advocacy. Under the leadership of our Vice President of Collective Impact and Giving, Patrice Relaford, we have deepened our focus on chronic absenteeism over the past few years, working to convene several of the same stakeholders named in House File 3585. Some of you may know that we fund the Minnesota Principal Survey, administered by the University of Minnesota's Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement. In the latest survey, completed in November 2025, principals across the state named chronic absenteeism as the second most difficult challenge they face, second only to student mental health. And that finding came even before Operation Metro Surge, which has further impacted student attendance across several districts. The reason absenteeism is so hard to address is that many causes lie outside of schools' control. Scholars Sarah Lenhoff and Jeremy Singer capture this well in their book, Rethinking Chronic Absenteeism, Why Schools Can't Do It Alone. Their research in Detroit over the course of 8 years shows that absenteeism is an ecological issue shaped by housing insecurity, transportation gaps, public safety concerns, and other community factors. The takeaway is clear. Schools can't solve this alone. Doctors Lenhoff and Singer recommend policymakers consider cross-sector coordination and support for schools, families, and communities. That's why the Minneapolis Foundation strongly supports House File 3585. Every smart policy, every wise investment we make in education depends on one simple truth. It only matters if students are there to benefit. We thank Representative Keeler for carrying this bill. We'd also like to thank Representatives Keeler and Bakeberg for their enduring commitment to addressing chronic absenteeism. The Minneapolis Foundation urges your support for the Interagency Council on Student Attendance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abon. Next on my list is Henry, followed by Ava Northrup. Welcome to the committee, Henry. You are not, as a minor, you are not required to state your last name, but please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
It's all right, I'll give you my last name too. My name is Henry Brick and I am a senior from Jordan High School. I would like to start by saying I did not skip any school to be here today. I was completely absent or at school today. But to provide some context for my testimony today, I am here as a representative of the organization Catalyst for Systems Change. We are an organization that utilizes student voice and representation within the Minnesota state government and its civic environment. I'm testifying today in voice to voice my support for the council solution as posed in this bill, specifically in its integration of the student representation by including a representative from the Minnesota Youth Council. The student attendance issue in Minnesota is definitely a complex one to understand, let alone fix. And the group who understands it the best is the students. If you really want to understand why students miss schools, then you must look at the source. As students, we see what is happening among our peers. We see safety concerns, we see mental health issues, we see transportation challenges, and we see our peers and our friends who feel disconnected from school. These are realities that do not show up clearly in attendance data or these policy discussions. Students must be a part of the discussion, and for the same reason, if you are making a hockey team, you better make sure you have players that know how to skate. That being said, I think that the full potential of this council is not fully reached, as only one of the 17 members represent the Minnesota youth. I believe it can be unlocked by tapping into one of the most valuable resources that is the student voice. Along with voicing my support, I would also like to recommend an amendment that expands the number of student representatives from 1 to 5, with 2 of them being representatives from the Minnesota Youth Council, and the other 3 being comprised of verified student representatives from the organizations Catalyst for System Change and MapStars, or the Minnesota Association of Alternate Programs. This is to reflect a variety of different lived experiences that students have across the state. Representatives. If we are serious about solving the student attendance issue in Minnesota, then we need to be just as serious about who is at the table. Students are not a symbolic addition to this conversation. We are the data, and we are the lived experience, and we are the ones most impacted by the outcome. If we want better attendance, if we want better policy, and if we want better results, then we need to make sure that the people closest to the problem are a part of the solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. And if you need to know, I'm glad you're not missing school. I'm sure Representative Bakeberg can make a few calls for you.
I'm sure would be excused.
Last on my list is Ava Northrup. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Ava Northrup, and I am a sophomore at Washburn High School in Minneapolis. I am also a representative for Congressional District 5 on the Minnesota Youth Council. I am testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Youth Council Academic Engagement and Attendance Committee, which I am a part of. At the beginning of this year, our committee set out to find root causes as well as solutions to the attendance crisis in our state, and very quickly, a few things became clear. The first was that low attendance is an incredibly complex problem. In my school and in schools across the state, students are absent for various mental health issues, addiction, transportation issues, not getting enough sleep, and much, much more. However, adults often assume that students just don't care or are being disrespectful. If a student is struggling with their mental health, it won't help them to be told to go to class or face a punishment. Our committee also realized that there are currently very few statewide attendance policies. That is not to say that there are not a multitude of different organizations and school districts doing important work on the issue, but often these groups work in a vacuum within their own areas. Every district and school is different. While some districts, particularly in more urban areas, might have the resources for programs or social workers who specifically work to support students with lower attendance, this isn't always true for rural districts, meaning that many students aren't getting the support they need. Schools need resources and funding to successfully improve chronic absenteeism, but these things currently are largely not being provided by the state government. The benefit of an interagency council is the multiple perspectives that it would be able to highlight. Because chronic absenteeism is such a complicated issue, it requires the resources and expertise of different groups. One perspective that is especially important to cover is that of students. Often, organizations and school districts look at youth as symbolic participants instead of meaningful contributors. The complexity of this issue is best understood through the voices of those who are most affected by it, which is youth. Our perspectives must be more than a checkbox. While I do believe that this council is a step in the right direction for including youth in conversation about attendance, there is more that can be done. Currently, of the 17 mandated members of the council, there is only one young person. I believe that a better method would be to include 2 Minnesota Youth Couple representatives, one from the 7-county metro area, as well as one from greater Minnesota. This increases the voice and power of the people who chronic absenteeism most directly impacts, as well as allows for the varying perspectives of students in metro versus rural schools. The council should also ensure that youth outside the MYC are able to contribute and to advise the council by creating and consulting task forces and panels.
These panels could be made of student leadership groups, school organizations, and youth activists. To be more inclusive of youth, the council should strive to meet outside of school hours, allow for online options for youth who do not have driver's license, and encourage the participation of all young people. Overall, I believe that this council, if used to highlight youth perspectives rather than speak over them, is an important step in the conversation about chronic absenteeism at the state level and creating coordination between different groups that are already doing important work on the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move to member questions. Representative Lawrence.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you, Rep. Baker, Rep. Keeler. Appreciate this discussion. I get to be in the discussion committee with you originally with it, so it's good to see it's still alive. I have some concerns, though, and a couple questions I'd like to bring to your attention. First question I have, and either one of you can answer this point in time. We just had a great presentation from the Compass department, right? The department here that said all the things that they're doing for attendance at this point in time. How is this better? How does this accomplish more than what they're already on the path to do at this point in time? Seems like a little bit of overlap.
Rep. Bakeberg?
I'll take this, yeah. Thank you, Representative Lawrence. It's a great question. So attendance and truancy work has been happening within the department, within schools, for as long as I've been involved in education. There are consistent gaps in communication. So the goal of this council is to break down those gaps in communication to be able to address the concerns. Give you an example. So Suzanne Arntzen works for Scott County. It wasn't until we had a pretty significant attendance issue that I engaged with Scott County on a consistent manner around attendance and truancy. What we found is that there are multiple layers of issues for kids getting to school. And the kids that the youth that testified talked about that, mental health, you know, and we talked about it in the study group as well. But I think the need for something like this is it is an ongoing requirement for these different agencies who play into and have an impact on kids, because the Department of Ed has jurisdiction over education, but it doesn't have jurisdiction over some of the other buckets that we talked about. And we need to make sure that we have an ongoing focus on this, because it is interdiscipline or interagency work that needs to be done, and silos need to be broken down, and people need to talk. Just like when Suzanne and I started talking, we were able to understand each other's lingo and the jargon in education versus the jargon in counties, and we were able to quickly communicate and more effectively serve our community. It's that type of mindset that we need to take across all of our state agencies that frankly don't communicate at a high level right now.
Rep. Lawrence, follow up?
Yep. Thank you, Chair Jordan. Follow-up question is, you've got several organizations listed here, departments listed here as well, and in looking through it, which department or what entity would head? When we did our study together on truancy, Rep. Keeler, you were the chair of that. You were more the director, and Rep. Bakeberg, you were the vice chair, if I remember correctly, right? When you bring this many people together, this many organizations, how does it look? How do you have, who is the head organization that coordinates the discussion so it actually accomplishes what the goal is?
Rep. Keeler.
Thank you. In the amendment, we highlighted that it is Minnesota Department of Education.
Okay, then I missed that. I apologize.
Any further questions?
Rep. Chair. Chair Jordan, I missed that. I apologize. So the Department of Ed will be the one that will be coordinating, correct?
Correct.
One last follow-up question, Chair Jordan?
Yes, go ahead.
Chair Jordan, the follow-up question, last question I have is, and Rep. Baker, you mentioned on this, I have a little concern that there isn't an expiration date on this. Seems like this should have a vision, a goal, a direction, and a conclusion at some point in time. Now, I understand that truancy can be ongoing, but my feeling is that we could also always re-up, put a sunset on it, and then move the sunset or add more time to an entity that needs it. So that's one of my concerns. If you'd like to comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Rep. Bakeberg.
Yeah, thank you. And that's actually a really good point, Representative Lawrence. And I agree that I would hope that we would be able to sunset this. I've been in education for 25 years, and chronic absenteeism and truancy has been an issue the entire time professionally for me. So I would hope and pray that we get to a point where we can say, you know what, we don't need to have this anymore. But I've not seen that historically, and I would like to push our agencies to collaborate and talk. And if we get to a point where that is happening on an ongoing basis, then absolutely we should sunset this. And we can talk about what that looks like. Very open, I think, to do that.
Great. Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair Jordan. And thank you, Representative Bakeberg and Keeler, for bringing this forward. I just had a quick question for Be It School, Ashley Hightower, one of the statistics that she said.
Ms. Hightower, would you be willing to come back and help us out?
So in your opening, you said each year you manage 10,000 different requests or situations. And then you said this year we're at 6,158. Do you mean this year as in like 2026 in the first 2 months?
Ms. Hightower.
Thank you. Representative Green, I am talking this academic school year, the 25-26 school year.
Thank you. Okay. I was like, wow, we are on a really tough trajectory. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Chair. And then the only other thing that I will add in here is, you know, I think the outside reach is how we get the root cause, which I really appreciate this, the crossover with the agencies. And I just support the students, what they said about getting on the agency too.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Roach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Representative Keeler and Bakeberg. I know your guys' intention of this is pure, and I know this isn't education or isn't finance, but I just am curious if there is a fiscal note on this and what the cost is. For me to know that it's a good policy, I just want to know what the cost is.
Representative Roach, it is going to ed policy after this. Okay. Finance. Thank you. Sorry, it feels like a Friday today. It's going to ed finance after this. I believe a fiscal note has been requested, and it can be examined in education finance.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and that's fantastic. Thank you. I along with Representative Bakeberg and Representative Hill and Keeler, we've also been in the classroom for a long time, and chronic absenteeism is something that plagues us all. And I appreciate Ed Allies giving us our cheat sheet that's specific to our groups and looking at what we are seeing in our own districts. And our schools in Austin have spent a lot of time trying to figure out the best way to identify the root causes. And I think that whenever we can ask our agencies to work together to address holistically a problem, I think it's really important. I'm trying to do that for Student Career Pathways as well. And it's been hard to get them to work together. And I think it's difficult when we start thinking outside the box, but that's what we need. And we as legislators are required to put that challenge to them. And so I'm definitely excited to be able to see this in education finance, and I would recommend a yes vote.
Rep Keeler, Rep Bakeberg, any closing comments?
Yeah, just real quick. I think this is the sheet that's pointed out from Ed Allies. And to go back to Representative Lawrence's question, we were just chatting in, you know, a way that we could that we could sunset this interagency commission is to, if we have if we have some measurable goals set within it, and then once we accomplish those goals, and then it's laid out, I think that's a really good way to look at it. Representative Lawrence and Representative Keeler had, and that was her idea. So I think that's something, frankly, that that we should do a better job here legislatively, but also just within our own schools, setting, measuring, following up, and making sure that what we're doing is actually having an impact on kids. So great feedback. Thank you.
Rep. Keeler.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for the good conversation, the ongoing conversation. Like we've said, this has been something that we have been trying to address. I just want to reiterate, when I was going to school for my master's in educational leadership, I asked my community, what were the barriers to academic success outside of academic rigor? And they were, none of them were around our math, reading, or any of the other science scores. It was around holistic things like homelessness, lack of food, and lack of access to mental health. That's like the whole reason why we need to have these agencies consistently working together. I do like the idea of being goal-focused. Once we've reached our goal of high attendance rates, then this wouldn't be needed anymore. And I also just want to make sure we make note to the youth in the room who gave the great suggestions to make sure that there's more of them at that table. We will take that into honest consideration to find a good amendment before we head over to education finance. Thank you all.
And with that, Representative Keeler renews her motion that House File 3585 as amended be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the bill is on its way. And the meeting is adjourned.